You know, hanging around with preachers must be catching because for this session I want to talk about three things. Number one, I'd like to make some comments about the idea of change. And I listen to so many people talk about how necessary it is to change if you're going to be effective. The trouble with our churches is the services are so dull. You say, you know, you have a song and then a prayer and another song, and you know when to sit down and you know when to get up, and you just drone them out. Well, a couple of years ago, I was a guest speaker at Kennedy's church. You know the Kennedy or the Kennedy plan. And they had invited me to come to a family life seminar, and we started on Friday night. And Saturday afternoon, this fellow came up and shoved his hand at me and said, "My name's Kennedy." Why, what an unassuming fellow. I didn't even know he was in the audience. He'd been there all the time. And I was speaking in a church on Sunday morning, and I met him there. He's a quiet, sober sort of a fellow. And he said, "Would you come into my chambers so that we can fit you with a robe?" Well, okay. So they fit me with a robe. And we went into that meeting, and you talk about an old-fashioned meeting. He's very serious. No nonsense, believe me, Sunday morning. And we sat down and got up and sat down and got up, and we just went through the old-fashioned routine. But you know, that big, big auditorium was packed out, and I wondered, where do these people come from? And they emptied it out and filled it up again. So there's got to be more to being effective than a simple little solution like, let's do it different. I was at Ray Steadman's church. Now, at Ray Steadman's church, they don't even have a pulpit. And I said, "Where's the choir?" No choir. And during the offertory, this was, mind you, Easter Sunday, he said, "We're a friendly people around here, and so while we take the offering, why don't you people just visit with each other and get acquainted?" And this roar comes up, and all through this huge packed auditorium on Easter Sunday, you got all these people talking back and forth and visiting while the offering is taken. Now, you couldn't get any different than Kennedy's church. But let me tell you this. I don't believe that people come to Kennedy's church for the routine. Nor do they come to Ray Steadman's church for the lack of routine. You know why they come? Because both those men have something to say. And there's no substitute for having something to say. So change for change's sake is not going to do much, I don't believe, for your organization. A couple of years ago, we had the National Convention of Farrell's Ice Cream Parlors in Detroit. That's the company that I was with, and so we asked the marketing director of Ford Motor Car Company to come and address us. And the hour before he came, we were barnstorming about how to change and improve Farrell's. And this fellow sat there, didn't have anything to say. And then he got up to speak and said, "I've been listening to you fellows talk for the last hour about making changes in pharaohs." He said, "Let me just say this to you, that when I knew that I was going to address you, I went over to one of your places for two reasons. One of them is to find out what the attraction is over there that draws my child into Pharaoh's, because I spent a lot of money in there. And the other reason is that I wanted to see how you did things, because I'm going to speak to you. Now, let me give you a caution about change. One time, the Ford Motor Car Company had an automobile called the Thunderbird. And it took first place, just shot up into first place. It was the best-selling sports car in the United States. Then somebody wanted a bigger motor. Somebody wanted better suspension. Somebody wanted to change the wheels. Somebody wanted to make it wider. And we changed. And we had a beautiful car, but our sales dropped, because we didn't have a Thunderbird anymore. He said, "We had another car called a Mustang. You ever hear of the Mustang?" He said, "It was the best-selling small car in the United States. Then we started to improve it. We added air conditioning. We changed the wheels. We changed the body. And our sales began to drop. You know why? Because we didn't have a Mustang anymore. It was a nice car, but it wasn't a Mustang." And he said, "If you will notice," that was 2 years ago, "and if you folks noticed the market last year, the Ford Motor Car Company returned to their original Mustang." So that's my first point. Be careful to give yourself such a simplistic notion that if we were to change something, that we would do something positive. Now, I'm all for change, but change will not be any kind of substitute for you having something to say. And the idea of a church, after all, is to make a contribution to the spiritual lives of the people. That is the purpose of your church, and don't ever forget it. Now, number two, I'd like to say a word about sacrifice. A lot of people have the idea that to be sacrificial means to be poor, or to be sacrificial means that you are prepared to do anything anybody asks you, and if you are sacrificial, you will ignore your talent and your ability. You see, a servant does anything that anybody asks. That's a fallacy. For you to be prepared to work beneath your ability is a fallacy. Oh, I've been in my restaurants where I picked up a broom and swept the floor when it needed it, but I'm not really the janitor. I'm the owner. I would do something in an emergency, of course, but my point is that a servant's job has definition to it. If I hire a cook and I come along and the place is spick and span, it's just sparkling, the lawn is beautiful, the shrubbery is top-notch, except he didn't cook. And I say, "Where's the food?" "Well, I can't do everything. Look at the lawn. Look at the shrubs. Look at how clean the place is. I'm sorry, I just never got around to cooking. You see, that's like saying, goodness, look how smoothly I'm running this place. And look at all the counseling I'm doing. Do you expect me to get around to have an effective sermon too? I just never made it. You see, you know, you would wonder how many people asked me to drive them somewhere, or somebody just dropped in and I just ran out of time. I'm sorry. No, a servant's duties have boundaries. And the fact that you are a particular servant excludes you from doing other things. Service implies that you're giving yourself willingly and gladly to a prescribed task. Sacrifice does not mean working beneath your ability or being poor. I would like to give you a thought about sacrifice. I used to be a member of a football team. And on that team, we had a spirit of sacrifice. I wanted to be on that team with my whole heart. I was doing exactly what I wanted to be doing. Now, where does the sacrifice come in? I had to sacrifice my own opinion. I had to give up my way and do it the coach's way. And on the football field, I had to do it the quarterback's way. That's what sacrifice is. I'm committed. That means I exclude other things. I did it knowingly and gladly and willingly. And when we played that game, we gave our bodies. I was pummeled and beaten. And in the days when I played football, we didn't have the platoon system. We played the whole game. And I was really battered and bruised, and I gladly gave my body to that game. I had more fun doing it, though. You see, I wasn't giving up anything. I was doing exactly what I wanted to be doing. But I gave my whole being to it. I would drag myself off that field bruised and battered and delighted and happy. I can remember times when I had to be helped off that field. And there are times when I helped my buddies off that field. That's what sacrifice is. It's giving yourself to the job. It's not working beneath your ability or doing something that you wish you didn't have to do. Sacrifice implies that you got your whole heart and soul and body and money and everything in it. Okay? Poor sacrificial me. I have to stay home. That's not sacrifice. That's lousy service. Poor me. Look at the demands these people make on me in this church. That's not sacrifice. That's simply withholding yourself from the job. Now, the third thing that I want to talk about are the characteristics of leadership. Number one. A leader has a record of attainment. There's just no question about it. Let's take leadership in the home. And I've been talking to your wives about them giving leadership to the home. There's no question about it. If the house is neat, the house is neat. And everybody knows it. And everybody recognizes that this is an accomplished housekeeper. This is a skillful housekeeper. Look at those children. There's got to be some input into those children. This is a skillful mother. You see, that's the kind of mother and housekeeper that can get a hearing. You have a right to speak. You have a record of attainment. Now, if you want to get a hearing as a minister, you have to have a record of attainment. He's a good preacher. No question about it. You see, you don't mind inviting your friends to a church when you know that this fellow in that pulpit is predictable. You can count on him. He'll warm your heart. He's a good teacher. Now, when you came as far as you came to this conference, you have a right to expect that I have something to offer you. It's worthwhile listening to me. Now, gentlemen, that's not egotism. This is a minimum requirement for me standing up here, that I have something to say. And one of the minimum requirements of anybody getting up into anybody's pulpit is that he has something to say burning on his heart. If you want to get some instruction, you go hear that pastor teach. Well, I was in Florida last week, and they were talking about this minister in Florida, and they say, "We've never heard a better teacher, Doc. You've got to go hear him." A leader has a record of attainment. A leader has a mission. He has a plan. He's going somewhere. There's a reason for doing what you're doing. And when anybody thinks about you, they think about a man with a plan, a man that's got something to do, a man that does it well. A man that's dedicated. And I find myself being dedicated to, as a layman, giving the best I've got to God. If you want to be a leader, if you expect people to listen to you, you have to be a man with a mission. A man with a purpose. A man who's taking the trouble to be prepared to give some direction to his mission and to give some energy to his mission and to put money into his mission. And obviously, when it comes to the ministry, because I've talked to some ministers who said, "I'd sure change if I knew what to do. I just don't know anything else, and so I got to ride it out another 10 years. That's not a man with a mission. So if you want to put some spizzorinkum into your church, you've got to have a record of attainment. Wouldn't it be interesting if you are a dull preacher and people say, "Hey, what's happening to his sermons? They're improving. Hey, did you hear that sermon? Do you suppose it's an exception?" "Well, Let's go next Sunday and hear if he can do it twice in a row. And after a while, you see, you just don't ask that kind of a question anymore. I wonder if it's worth going to church. I wonder if this sermon is going to be any good. What's the choir going to be like? How do they run that church? A record of attainment in a mission. I think another important thing about leadership is this leader needs to be intellectually mature. After all, life is a bundle of issues. One issue after another. One problem after another. All kinds of people are expressing their opinions these days. This is the way to go. And the man who's intellectually mature has made up his mind. He believes something. You can find out what he believes. Now, there are people who aspire to this kind of approach. Well, you know how it is on this issue. There are five views. Now, let me give you the five. You see, you impress people with the breadth of your knowledge. And then say, you know, I have a lot of respect for you, and far be it from me to impose my views on you. What matters it what I think? I have respect for your judgment. And so here are five views. Take your pick. That's a lot different from making it very clear that here I stand. Dr. Brandt said, I can remember the days when I aspired to be a non-directive counselor and I could have a conversation, a spirited conversation for a whole hour with you, and we blew around a lot of words, but you never did find out what I thought. And you can design a message that way, too. You know, I've had ministers say, I wouldn't dare speak the way you do. My people would think that I meant them. You're going to design a message, very carefully tailor a message that doesn't apply to anybody, you're just likely to reach your goal. So when somebody comes up and says, did you mean me? Oh, no, I didn't mean you. You weren't talking about, what's the use of going to your church if you aren't trying to reach me? A man that's intellectually mature is an individual who stands for something. He believes something. My son, a few years ago, he was a professor in a graduate school. And the theories that he was hearing didn't fit with the way I was doing things. I was too dogmatic, he said. I was too specific. I was preaching. And I said, right, your discernment is improving at least. But you know, a few years later, he came to me and said, hey, Dad, I've been watching these professors around here, and I've been watching you, and I'd like to know, how can I get in on what you do? He said, I've been watching your business affairs, for instance, and goodness, we sometimes have four meetings to decide what we're meeting about. And I watch you, and you go in, you say, what's the trouble? and you listen to what they have to say, and you make up your mind, and away you go. How can I get in on what you're doing? An intellectually mature person is decisive. He's not afraid to make up his mind. My son would say, "Dad, when are you going to get off my back? After all, I'm 29 years old." I said, "Dick, I go around the world trying to influence people. Do you think I'm going to overlook you? You might as well get used to me. I'll get off your back when I die." Go away and leave me alone. In case you didn't get it, I came here to influence you. And I think it's perfectly clear that all of us came here to influence you. We're not noncommittal. We're not uncommitted. And you need to speak in such a way that you cause your people to make choices. It's not what the psychologist says, it's what you say that counts. You're the custodian of the most important information in the world. Aren't you? Really now, are you? Oh, it would seem to me that anybody here would stand up when you stand up straight and tall. Intellectually mature. That pastor of ours, he's a radiant, happy fellow. He helped me with my family. He helped me make up my mind. We like the way he thinks. I remember one time, a few months ago, I was in Dallas, and I was on a talk show, a radio talk show, and the fellow, the MC that was running the thing, asked me what I thought about drinking. And I said, "I think it's an evil." And you couldn't believe it. We were sitting by a switchboard, and I didn't hardly get that out of my mouth, and that switchboard lit right up like a Christmas tree. And you know what these people were saying? "Did you really mean it, that drinking is evil?" Yes. "Aren't there any circumstances when drinking makes sense?" No. But you know what? I got an immediate response. I just couldn't believe what happened when I... But you see, that's what happens. Now, I think that you ought to speak in such a way that when I listen to you, I either have to accept or reject what you say, but you've made it so plain that I can't ignore you. That's what I've tried to do. That's what Bill tried to do. Is to make it so plain that you either had to take it or leave it. But you couldn't ignore it. I'm not talking about a nervous, anxious, soft-handed fellow, but a radiant, happy, successful, decisive man with a mission who has a history of success, and you can start doing a better job Sunday than you ever did before. And when you are successful, you'll feel successful.
Now, I'm worried about whether you're going to have a lot of problems or not. In fact, I'm a prophet in that sense. You will have trouble.